Hello there and welcome to Marketing Room 101 for another episode. I'm Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles, the brand comms agency that creates, launches and grows unforgettable brands. And this is the podcast where I invite marketers to join me for a good old rant and give them a chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. In this episode, I'm joined by the one and only Nick Entwistle, the creator and curator of 1 Minute Briefs, the creative community of tens of thousands of people that reaches millions of people every day on behalf of hundreds of brands with one very simple idea, to come up with a creative idea in response to the daily advertising brief in just 1 minute. Since Nick set it up in 2012, OMB has partnered with brands, charities and organisations of all sizes across the globe, and I've no doubt that you'll have come across campaigns yourself in the past decade that have come out of it. Nick and I chatted about the danger of overthinking and the power of quick creativity, but ended up having a conversation about everything from the curse of committees to the collective power of community, as well as ways to stamp out cyberbullying. Nick is very laid back, very open, honest, and I could have easily chatted with him all day. So here is my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with the fastest man in advertising, Nick Entwistle. Nick, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. So, Nick, could you set the scene for us, please? What's it like in here in Marketing Room 101?
The way I'm envisioning it is a never-ending work meeting. You've got people throwing in certain ideas and completely overthinking everything. The briefing is way too long, and we spend so much time talking about doing something rather than actually doing something. And that's a bit of a nightmare for me. And I hate meetings at the best of times. So that's how I sort of see this.
Yeah, I like that. Similarly, Paul Feldwick, the first ever guest on the podcast, described this scenario where you're in a meeting and there are about 10 people in the room. They're all just sat staring at the laptops. One person's presenting. No one's really listening. And they're just going through a cycle where a project will take so long, nothing ever happens.
No, that's, I mean, in the industry, and sometimes you'll have a meeting and then it'll be like, right, let's have another meeting in a couple of hours. And you're like, can I just have a little bit of time to actually have a think rather than present back, you know, rather than constantly be looking to achieve something for the next meeting, actually going away and doing something good, come up with something good idea, and then having a little bit think about it after it.
It's a bit counterintuitive, isn't it? But maybe it's part of the whole process of design by committee that you get in a lot of businesses where it's like, actually, we all feel like we need to nudge something towards the finish line rather than leap there.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, there's a need for it as well, but it's just when you have too many of them. And even, you know, they can take too long. Sometimes you've got people that are wanting to sort of look busy and have a bit of an input, but it's not really productive to spend so much of your time on those meetings. But at the same time, strategy and things like that, there's a place for it. I'm not the type of person that says it has no place and I can just go and do something. I think it's important that everyone does have a say, but not to stifle the creativity and the output.
Something I've spoke a lot about with Principles is trying to have structure to enable space, you know, stepping back and being like, right, you're going to have some space now to answer the problem.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes you need that clear head. Sometimes you might be on multiple projects at the same time. So it can be quite nice to just have complete sort of freedom, maybe to actually just have a bit of time.
Give people the overnight test as well. I think if people have been spending all day coming up with ideas, see what they come up with when they're asleep as well. See what they come up with when they're walking the dog or in the shower, you know. You cogitate on it overnight and you're missing out on the sort of subconscious solutions to the problem that seem to pop up randomly, aren't you, if you're trying to get it done before close of play.
Yeah, sometimes it might be that you are on a little or a walk or something. I try and get out for a walk every day. I mean, my mind is constantly on anyway. So sometimes the ideas do come to you, or like you might be in the shower in the morning and think, oh, I've got an idea for that brief or whatever. So sometimes I find that the structure of, you know, the industry and expectations and things somewhat stifle indefinitely when I've been working within agencies.
So, Nick, most people will have heard of 1 Minute Briefs, which you set up back in 2012, I believe. But for those who haven't, could you please try and explain what 1 Minute Briefs is in 60 seconds? I've got my timer here. I'm going to give you 60 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do my best. So it's a platform that first started out at university. We gave ourselves 1 minute on a brief because we had 7 weeks on a brief and wanted to do something obviously much quicker. And we start to realize that within 1 minute, give yourself a brief, you can come up with something actually really good. Also, you might come up with something not so good, but you've only spent a minute on it. So you do it again and again. And then if we've got a room full of people, we can very quickly cover a wall of ideas, start to collaborate, use those things in different ways. I took it to Twitter. I've set a different brief every single weekday for the community to get involved in, and more people get involved in that every day, which has higher reach and gives creatives. I'm probably at the minute stage already.
You're all right. You've got time.
If I got more time. But yeah, you've got a minute to come up with something. So it allows people to just get involved on a low level effort to be part of a community. And the growth of that is exponential, organic. And people are also advertising something. It's never changed. It's always been an advertising brief. So what we've done, we did it straight away, early doors, was to just do it for fun. Our first ever brief was with LucasAid as a client. Didn't know what to charge at the time, so it's probably really cheap. I know I'll be over the minute now, but
You did well.
Yeah, so we did it with a client, and then that has huge reach because it's for a brand. Some of those briefs might then make their way to, say, billboards and things, but in its own right, the actual social campaigns themselves have reach in potentially millions every day and get into trending territory. So yeah, it's just grown and grown in that respect. And then for that reason, we now work with a lot of clients, which then helps it grow as well. Yeah, so it's just come from that very small idea at university and grown into this great thing where opportunities can be had, collaborations can be had, and it can, you know, it can help improve lives, raise money for charities, and have a real sense of community as well.
So you have a massive following now. I mean, I've had a go at a couple of 1 minute briefs. You seem to get responses from here, there, and everywhere across all these channels. Do you know how many submissions you've had in total, or do you know rough ballpark where you're at now? Because it must be into the thousands.
Yeah, well, it's been about 12, 13 years that we've been going, and we're probably at around 250 briefs a year because we do one every weekday.
Yeah,
on an average of about. I always have a benchmark of about 100. Now, sometimes, like on our Friday brief we've just done, there were 300. So it can be ridiculous numbers in a day. You end up trending and things. But as an average of, let's say, 100, which is still a great amount of submissions for any brief on any day, we'd probably say about 300,000 submissions overall across those years.
What's the sort of collective reach then when you get... So you've got 100 submissions, haven't you? But then the collective reach must be enormous.
It is, yeah. So the way it tends to work, obviously, because people are submitting their ideas to us, they're actually sharing to their own followers before it even hits us. So each individual entry has its own amount of impressions. And obviously, it's advertising something. So if that's with a brand, then that's impressions for a brand as well. So the brand themselves can then share it or interact. We will share all of those to our 40,000 on there. LinkedIn's about 80,000 or something. When you're sharing and people are posting them and you get so many likes, interactions, comments, the actual potential impressions of that being in people's feeds at any one time is actually in the millions every single day, and can even be over 10 million when we do some of the bigger briefs.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's always in the millions every day. I know that sounds, it's quite an odd one to sort of almost guarantee millions of potential impressions at any one time. But I do reports on these for clients, and it shows you exactly how many impressions it's actually getting one way or another. So, yes, it's interesting. It's quite difficult for people to get their head around how it even works, even myself. But the actual numbers that come from it are ridiculous.
Now, I'm personally a big fan of 1 minute briefs because it sort of takes me back to when I was a student at Huddersfield Uni, and my favourite tutor, a chap called Pete Norris, he used to encourage us to do one scamp every single day, and I'd get more out of doing that than I think I did any other part of being at uni, because by its nature, the lack of time prevents overthinking a good idea, doesn't it, but also overcrafting a bad one. But there are some creatives, people like John Hegarty, who say you should always bin your first idea. And some people, it still seem to come up every now and again, people saying, yeah, you go into a room, your first idea, you throw it straight in the bin, and then you go off and craft more and more ideas until you've exhausted it. What do you say to those people?
You know, someone like John Hegarty's a bit of a hero in the advertising world for me. I spoke on the same card as him a number of years ago, and I've even collaborated with him on a one-minute brief, actually, for his wine company. So he knows about one-minute briefs. He's done a little video clip for one of our winners. You know, his thing would be more about throwing the idea in the bin. Mine would be, that's fine, but don't rule it out. The bin's always there. You might want to pick it back up later, sort of thing. So if I'm working on a brief, I will just start rattling out ideas. Some people will fixate on that first idea, like what you've just said a minute ago about overproducing what's a basic idea. What I would do is rattle out loads of ideas, but I would never discount the first one. In fact, I'm thinking back to a pitch that I wrote an idea. I wrote two words down in a brief for a massive pitch. It was for like hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of work for this agency. And the brief was being read out to us. And I just wrote these two words down. I thought, that's going to be the idea. And we did a two-week pitch, ideas all over the walls and things. We showed three big ideas for this big elaborate pitch. But the two words that I'd written down was the idea that won the agency that work. And we did a whole campaign on it. I mean, that was before we'd even finished the brief. So it shows that for me, I think as a creative that's always on the lookout and observing things in the industry trends, looking at what's going on in the media and things like that, if you train yourself to be like that, you can come up with something really quick in response to a brief. One idea I think about is someone in the meeting maybe 25 years ago or something said, what about compare the meerkat? Sounds a bit like market. What about meerkat?
Yeah.
That was just a 1 minute brief. Like, you've not overthought that. That's just looking at the word market and thinking, let's be silly with it. And they've had the courage to make themselves potentially look stupid in the meeting and say, meerkat sounds like market. And you could have been completely laughed out the room. Another thing of this is that account people and strategists and everyone needs to be on board with the silliness of the ideas, because it was a silly idea, but still to this day it's their main campaign. So you need to get behind these ideas, and the silliness and the first thought should not be ruled out, in my opinion, because it's better to just think sort of off the cuff, coming up with stuff, and then elaborate on it once you've spent a little bit of time coming up with stuff. Then you can do your craft, and everything takes time, the strategy, how you implement those ideas. But it's the way I work when I work on my own projects or films and things as a creative director. But at the same time, it's why I tell people to do 1 minute briefs, because the opportunities are there to come up with stuff quickly.
Yeah, and I think I get where people like Hegarty or like any of the other people come from when they do say, put your first idea in the bin. Because like you say, it could be a great idea, but equally, it's probably the one that's most likely to be obvious. So I understand where they're sort of coming from when they're saying, actually, it's probably not a unique idea if it's the first thing that springs into your head, but it could be. But also, I guess what you're saying is get yourself into the habit of being able to come up with ideas quicker, train your brain to work in that sort of way.
Yeah.
And then the chances are you'll be able to come up with ideas quickly that are unique and are different.
Exactly. And I'm sure that people like Hegarty would be able to do that as well. So they won't come up with the obvious, because you're training your mind to not go there, you know, with this, the easy pun. And you'll see it on OMB sometimes where a certain headline or quote comes up several times, because you've gone for that first initial idea. But then when you start to come up with something different or think a little bit differently about it, you'll start to think in a different way.
So, Nick, in a second, you're going to banish something. But before we do, what have been the biggest success stories for brands out of 1 minute briefs? And what's been your personal favourite submission of the potentially 300,000 that you've had?
So lots to think through. I mean, you can think back to the Lucozade campaign showing us that it could work for brands. And that was just a relatively small campaign compared to the ones we do now, but it showed that it worked. We did one for WWF, which was a very simple idea by someone called Zed on our feed. And it was just taking the animals out of football team badges and logos. And it was a stunning idea. It goes back to what you just said a minute ago about taking an idea like that. So it was a beautiful visual idea. But how are we going to implement that within the real world and turn it into a big campaign? So what we basically did was started asking the question to football teams. Because if they were to do it themselves, we wouldn't even need to make a campaign. It's them doing it for us. And everyone says, who else is doing it? And at first, no one else is. So you're just like, oh, you can be the first. And then Wolves said, we'll take our thing off for the day. I'm like, oh my God. Then we can go to Aston Villa and say, Wolves are doing it, by the way. Are you going to do it? And then West Brom. Suddenly this campaign starts to spiral, and then we get billboard space and things. But it comes from that very simple visual idea and just seeing it where, do you know what, this could be the next big thing. And then that had a billion plus impressions overall as a campaign. It's been running over the last few years. And yeah, there's a TaskRabbit one at the moment, which has got song lyrics up.
Yeah, I love this one.
Yeah, it's great. It's just a bit of fun, really. And we've teamed up with TaskRabbit to, you know, music lyrics based on tasks. And I've just been out today, actually, in Manchester and seen them all over the buses, tram advert shells and things like that. So it's just absolutely everywhere at the moment. And it's nice to see. So I think that's definitely one of my favourite campaigns because I'm just seeing it absolutely everywhere, all over Manchester and all over the tube. So yeah, NHS, we managed to get them to Christmas number one 10 years ago now, 2015 it was. I went and directed the music video, but it all came from a 1 minute idea. Wedding vows, so for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, the NHS is there. We then took that idea because the choir got in touch with us. We then started asking celebrities to say, I do, and hold up a thing. And then other celebrities start to do it. And then suddenly we're beating Justin Bieber on Christmas Day. So amazing. Sometimes, going back to what I said earlier, it's the spark of something. So that initial thought can make you think, what can we do next?
The thing that struck me about what you just said there, and when I have looked through everything that's come out of 1 minute briefs, it's just a variety of brands that get involved. You know, from the NHS to LucasAid, WWF to TaskRabbit, it's such a spread, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's always been the same because we do a different brief every weekday. Like today's is for coffee drive-throughs. And I don't know why that came into my head, but sometimes it's literally what's in my head at the start of the day, or it might be a certain day of the year or something like that. But that could quite easily be with Costa or Starbucks, for example. We could have done that today with them. Or tomorrow it might be, got a snooker chalk at the side here. It could be for that. You almost do it for anything every day. And sometimes the more humdrum briefs like tweezers or something like that are really fun. You don't know what's coming next sort of thing. Yeah, it's just, it can almost work for any brand or theme or something. Coca-Cola rang me up from Atlanta. I couldn't believe it. This is just this 1 minute little silly community that we started at uni, but they rang me up when I was in a meeting. Like, what's this here? They said, we want to do the biggest 1 minute brief you've ever done. And they said, we're going to give you £10,000 prizes. And I thought, wow. And then this was the one that was relentless and got 1,000 plus submissions in a day. It was non-stop, relentless stuff.
So, Nick, the time has come. What would you like to banish from the industry and keep here in Marketing Room 101 for eternity?
I would want to banish overthinking. I think it goes back to some of the stuff that we've been talking about. We've mentioned other people have different opinions on thinking more, but I want to banish overthinking because I think that you can almost talk yourself out of ideas. And going back to when we were young, having a playful nature with ideas, we used to write anything on posters and pieces of paper and cards for our mums and dads and things. I look back at them and I'm embarrassed looking at them because of ridiculous things that you write in them. But we didn't care too much. And what we do is we get older, we start to doubt ourselves. We start to think what that person's going to say. Again, same with the makeup thing. Someone might have thought, no, I'm going to sound stupid saying this. But if we put ourselves out there and don't overthink it too much, some great stuff can come out by being a bit playful, being a bit silly, and who knows where those ideas can sort of take you.
I don't think overthinking ever leads to a more pure idea, does it? It feels like the more you're thinking about it, you're just watering down the purity of an idea. We just need to be more single-minded more often, don't we? If the idea is great, try not to overthink it to a point where you're just starting to water it down and dilute it.
100%. I think it's not just about coming up with the idea either. I mean, I've had it recently with clients because I do a lot of film stuff aside from OMB. Yep. And sometimes there'll be little tiny script changes. There'll be, oh, we've not shown that there, or we didn't show this product. It's like you're almost watering down the great film you've got for the sake of tweaking a very minor detail. You're bit by bit making it less engaging. Same with billboards. You know, you might have two big words on a billboard, chuck a big, massive, fat logo on there, put a lot of bullet points in the corner, put a product shot on there. Suddenly, I don't know where to look because you've overthought it, whereas it only needed to have something very simple on there. But yeah, that process of watering down ideas is not just the overthinking in the first place of coming up with a thought, but I think it's the self-doubt as well. So when you are coming up with something, you do have the thought in your head. That's one thing. So when I get people to do these live 1 minute briefs where I literally sit people head to head, and sometimes people say, I've got nothing. And I'm like, you have, because I don't believe creative block exists. I know you've got something in your head. You're just not writing it down. Even if it's just Chalky McChalks and like that, I don't know, anything, whatever's in your head. Somebody and I thought of that then. As long as you've written something down, that's what One Minute Briefs is about, because it sort of forces you to do that. And it also gives you a bit of an excuse to as well. Because if I gave you an hour and you wrote that down, you might feel a bit silly, but it's just allowing yourself to have those ideas and being a bit playful and being a bit more childlike. For me, it does go back to that playful, childlike thing.
An old creative director I used to work with talked a lot about digging lots of small holes and then choosing which ones you're going to explore further. That first idea is you've dug another small hole, haven't you? You need to do that. And then you take a look at them and think, actually, which one's going to have the gold or the oil or whatever the analogy is? You know, which are the ones that we're going to really focus on from there? But the more small holes you have, the more chance you've got of finding something that actually does have something great in it.
Absolutely. That's exactly how it is, because if you just keep digging one hole, you might not get anywhere. Thing, just that little idea there, forget about it, it's gone. Next one, come back to it later when you realize where the sort of gold is or which ones you want to pursue, really. The way I work, if I'm given a concept brief or something, I'll just have almost a list of things and I'll be like, why did I even think of that? Delete. And then think something in that, I'll keep that there. It might just be three words on a page and it means nothing to anyone. It might not even be an idea. It's just a couple of, or a pun or something. And then take that and think, I could turn that into like an event or a stunt or something like that. There's a reason why you sort of have these thoughts, and some might be better than others.
There's something interesting sort of when you talk about overthinking. I think overthinking can happen when one person spends too much time on something, but it becomes the worst when you have multiple brains on one thing, doesn't it? I'm thinking back to your TaskRabbit examples where there's such a purity of an idea there. We're going to use song lyrics to create a funny, entertaining way to talk about jobs that can be done by people in your home. But then, like you were describing earlier with how you'd ruin an out-of-home ad, if you had more and more and more people involved there getting their individual point across, you would start putting more information on. You'd start explaining. One person might go, oh, I'm not sure people will quite understand what we're talking about there. You might have a legal department saying, oh, but what if we're going to get sued by that person? So let's add a caveat to that. And the overthinking comes with more brains as often as it does from one brain thinking too long, doesn't it?
100%. Too many cooks spoil the broth, is it? Is that the
exactly thing? That, yeah.
I think there's definitely a level of that. People will all have their own opinions and ideas as well. And also, you've got to be fairly trusting of the creative sometimes. It's quite difficult as creatives because sometimes you chuck your work out there and you might not have had full creative thing, and then people will say, oh, this is bland. Putting your work out there is very difficult these days because you get so many people wanting to say, no, this is... Even the TaskRabbit stuff, when I've seen people sharing it on there, someone said, this is one of the best campaigns I've seen for ages. And you've got creative directors saying, oh, this isn't great, blah, 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 whatever. It's not nice to see, but it's not meant to change the world. It's meant to just make people have a bit of a laugh, look up at the side of that billboard and think, oh, that's funny.
Yeah, we're not saving lives, are we? You know, no one's...
That's what I say. It's, you know, we're selling cereal and crisps. Do you know what I mean? Who cares? It doesn't need to be an award-winning mega thing, but if it's made someone laugh or feel something in the day, what's wrong with it? You know, that's why those adverts work really well. Sometimes I think the industry takes itself way too seriously and everything has to be exceptional. And it's like, it doesn't, you know, everyone's so judgmental. The problem you do have with that is that it contributes to people doubting themselves on putting an idea like that out there. And what OMB is trying to do is stop that sort of thing by almost giving you an excuse to have a bit of playfulness. But sometimes I think, oh God, I don't even want to say this thing or post this thing because someone might say something negative about it. And there will always be people that do. And you need a very thick skin to be able to actually even put yourself out there. So as an industry, I think we need to be more supportive of creative playfulness.
I think it's a really positive message as well that we need to, instead of catfights amongst ourselves, between agencies, between people that are specialists in digital or are specialists in broadcast, I don't know, it feels like we've become fragmented in many ways and that there's a little bit of infighting sometimes. That, like you say, you'll see it on LinkedIn or you'll hear it at networking events, where really what we need to be doing is collectively as a creative industry celebrating being creative, because our collective, our shared enemy is a lack of creativity, isn't it? I don't really see other agencies necessarily as competition or other channels or other ways of working as the enemy. I see the enemy as being this trend away from creativity towards dull, rational work. And what you're saying there is actually, let's not be tearing people down. Yeah. Let's get towards a culture where I've come up with this idea, I'm going to throw it out into the world. And, you know, it might be amazing, it might not be, but who cares? I'm coming up with ideas and that's what we're here to do.
Exactly. And I think if you think about being an artist, I've got involved a little bit. In fact, I've got a couple of exhibitions out for something that has been purely creative called the Wheel Trim Shady. And it's just painting wheel trims.
Interested?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
You'll have to have a look at it. It's got an Instagram and everything. But I just started off this project and I was thought, I'm just being purely creative now. I'm not doing it to a brief. No one needs to judge it or what. You still get judgmental people even when you put something on Instagram and you're like, oh, this is crap or whatever. But as soon as you put yourself out there, you'll get something. But the idea of being completely, purely creative is only through art, really. But it's trying to get people to just enjoy that moment of coming up with something that's purely creative in your head, you know, rather than trying to get every single message in there in a certain way and just having a bit of fun with it. And if you do, you will come up with those big award winning, like the animal, that logo stuff. As soon as I saw that, I thought that could be a massive campaign. In fact, I spoke to WWF and said, you should really do something with this. I don't know what it is yet. And they said, we're having our meeting in an hour for our next annual campaign. And suddenly we had to come up with
what are the odds?
Yeah, literally in an hour. And I said, right, leave it with me. Rattled this little crappy PDF together, sent it across to them, and maybe an hour or two later, they came back and said, we want to do this. And then you think, right, what do we actually do? Because all we've got really is that we've got an idea of what we want to do, but how are we going to try and do it? And we did it just by, you know, perseverance and things as well. So you could quite easily have just thought, oh, it's quite a nice idea. Or there might have been people that said, yeah, it's a good idea, but no one will ever do it. That negative mindset. But if you work together with people and have a bit of a belief, then you are putting yourself out there a little bit, but you have to take the flak. I mean, I remember we did a film for a little girl who had cancer, and the idea was that age 3, she should not know the C word. And we did it and put it out there, and then that had 10 million views on Unilab. But I started to get obsessive about it and look into the comments. People thought she was swearing and things. And I'm just looking at the negative. Certain people I spoke to when the 1 minute beefs have gone viral, they hate it. They actually really struggle with the fact that they're seeing negative comments about their work. But yeah, I started saying, watch it till the end and all this. And even though there was 80,000 great comments on it, I was looking for all the bad ones. So as you say, I think as an industry, it's important to just, you know, don't go in there and say something negative. It might be that the brief was different. It might be that you just want to be a bit playful with your ideas and that's all you want to do with it. I wasn't trying to change the world with this idea. You don't need to say anything bad about it.
So I think, yeah, 100%. I'm absolutely convinced on overthinking. We're going to keep overthinking here in Marketing Room 101. Now, before you go, is there anything that you'd like to bring back from Marketing Room 101?
Yeah, I think humour in advertising has been lost. Even some of the stuff that we've been mentioning where people are just trying to have a laugh, trying to be a bit playful with their ideas. And when you're getting people talk about being offended by a lot of stuff. People say it's not a very good idea, it's a cheap pun, or even if a pun makes you laugh, like I would share that with people, or a meme or something like that. It's the type of stuff I would share. Or even if you're just walking along and there's a big pun on the billboard that makes me smile, then great. Whereas people will call it a cheap idea, first thought. It's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me.
If it makes you laugh, right?
Yeah, if it makes you laugh or feel some sort of an emotion. Not everything has to be sort of Cannes Lions winning. And I think the reason I got into advertising was some of the old classic advertising. A lot of it used humour. And I just hardly ever see an advert and want to tell anyone about it. Whereas I used to a few years ago. Or something funny or something really creative.
When I'm talking about advertising with clients, I'll often say, we want to create something that people want to talk about on the bus or they want to talk about at the school gates. And that is becoming rarer and rarer, isn't it? That people have those big moments anymore, not just on TV, but generally where people are just like, oh, have you seen that ad for Dime Bar, for Honey Monster, for John Smith's, whatever it would have been? You know, they do still exist, don't they? But they are harder to find.
Yeah, exactly. I think we almost talk ourselves out of it. As an industry, we're scared to say stuff as well because we're thinking, oh, what if people don't like this idea? Or, you know, a bit, maybe sometimes it'll be something like Marmite or Iron Brew did stuff that they might not do now. Or if you're in the middle and you're just somewhere vanilla, no one's going to care about you. And it's the same as an industry. We do get into a bit of an echo chamber, I think, in LinkedIn. You don't know, is anyone caring about this outside of here? Whereas when I look outside at TaskRabbit, I see that they're all over the place. So they must be doing a really good job for them. In fact, I know they are because I've spoken to the team. So for anyone to say it's not a great idea is sort of wrong, really, because it's doing well. It's doing the job.
Like you say, is it working for the client and is it delivering results? How many Cannes Lion winning ads ever actually get seen by a person in the real world?
There's that as well. And so is it a great idea? Maybe between us all as creative directors and people like that, maybe we think this is great. It's really different thinking. But I do think it should be celebrated, but also not ruling out the ideas that are there to do a job as well and downplaying or judging in a negative way. The TaskRabbit ones use humour, for example, and it's quite refreshing, actually, because when I do see them or when I've seen people share them, it's because it's made them laugh in the day and people can relate to it. Even thinking back to, you know, some of the classic stuff like Tango and things like that for me, or Reebok Belly's Gonna Get You. They probably wouldn't run it now because it might offend someone somewhere, but it was almost the point it was making.
It was brave, wasn't it?
Yeah. It just takes me back to those things. There are a couple of things that you do see, but the humour has been lost because I think people are trying to appease so many people and sit in that vanilla area. If you're in that middle area where no one cares at all, I think that's where you run into trouble because you're not even being noticed. So I think humour for me definitely has been lost. There's all sorts of reasons for that. But the problem is, I think we need a bit of humour in our lives. You know, there's a lot of things going on societally and there's always crises and things like that. Let's just have a bit of fun. And also, not when we do have a bit of fun, don't drag it down. Let's just have a bit of fun with our creativity and have fun in our jobs. You know, let the public have a bit of fun as well, because that's what we got into this for, I personally think.
You know, I think ironically, the case for humour is much greater now than it ever has been. You mentioned about 80s, 90s advertising, that sort of era, when ultimately a lot of the time when it gets talked about, you're talking about TV advertising, where people didn't have a choice, really. You have to watch the ads until the programme comes back on. So you had attention, and then you're entertaining people, you're providing humour to try and make it stick in the mind in some way. But now with social media, people have got a choice whether they actually pay attention or not. It's entirely driven by the viewer. That therefore means that humour, entertainment, whatever it might be, is so much more important than it ever has been before. Because if you're not entertaining, if you're not as entertaining as the content that you sit in between, then you're immediately being skipped without ever being seen, right? So you're not just fighting now for people to remember your ad, you're fighting for them to even look at it for more than 0.2 of a second.
Yeah, and the way I think about it is the group chats. So the group chats you're in or the ones you're in on Instagram DMs or whatever. Because people are watching so many videos and reels at the moment, more often than not, it's stuff that makes you laugh. And you're like, oh my God, sharing that really relates to me. I feel seen by that thing. If you looked at everyone's direct messages, it'll be full of videos that are just making people howl with laughter and think, oh, I'm going to share that with this mate because this will make them laugh.
That's the only reason you're sharing it, right? You'll share something if you think it's funny or you think they'll find it interesting, because otherwise, why else would you be sharing it with them?
Exactly. And you're almost, I have different friend groups. So I wouldn't share this video with that friend or my mum, that type of thing. But the humour is there. People are having it almost in secret these days. We're all still laughing our heads off at memes and stuff like that. Why are we not doing that in public? I think people are so scared and almost create a fake version of themselves. It's a bigger thing, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
At play here, and something that I'm trying to combat a little bit with what I do, I suppose. So yeah, I think we should not be so serious. Why so serious?
I like that. It's a good point to land on. So in summary, I'm definitely going to take overthinking from you and keep it here. I'm definitely going to give you humour back and let you distribute that across the whole of the industry. Before you go, every episode, my brother sends me a question. He wanted to ask you, you support the anti-cyber bullying charity CyberSmile. What's one thing we can all do to help put an end to cyberbullying?
I mean, I think we've probably touched upon it a little bit in terms of being quite judgmental to each other and being negative about people's work, because when I've seen it or when I've seen a negative comment about either my work or my community, it makes me feel crap for the whole night, like genuinely. I'll take it on board and I'll be thinking about it. And then if someone, maybe at the start of the careers even, sees something about their work, it can almost destroy a career before it's even started. So in terms of the industry, cyberbullying, just that negative thing that you say, even if it's amongst 80,000 comments, someone will see that and they will feel rubbish about it. So it's just being mindful of the comments that you make online and what that can do to a human being. Even if you think it's quite a small thing, someone's put their hard work into that. There's so much doom scrolling and negativity in things online these days. You know, we all get dragged into it, but if you're using social media for the power of good, try and drag people up with you rather than drag people down in order to get yourself up there. I think that's fully what I would say in terms of that.
I think that's a really, really positive message. I think that point that you made there as well about context, people might say something flippantly, but when you're reading it without seeing the body language, without hearing the tone of voice, you don't know how somebody's saying that, do you? I think you've got a responsibility to think about how what you're saying could be interpreted, haven't you?
That's it. I think when we're texting mates or family or whatever, we've all been there where you're laughing, saying something, they've taken it completely the wrong way.
100%.
And that's through written word. Like even when I'm running the feed in the community, someone might say something negative about one of the followers or what piece of work, like all the time, and people don't realize that there's a human being behind it.
100%. I think that's really positive. Nick, before you leave, how can creatives get involved in 1 minute briefs? How can brands get involved? And how can people find you and chat to you?
Yeah, well, the website's bankofcreativity.co.uk. So if anyone wants to get in touch as a brand, please feel free on the feeds to get involved in 1 minute briefs, pretty much at 1 minute briefs on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So you should be able to find us on any of those. We recently changed it so you can now enter on LinkedIn as well. We now post a brief every weekday on there. But yeah, just get involved and you know, spend a minute. It can literally be a scribble or something like that. It's a nice community to get involved in. You know, we have a little bit of a laugh and a bit of friendly competition every day. And just gives you a bit of an outlet to be part of a community and just have a bit of a go at something.
I have to say firsthand, after doing a couple of 1 minute briefs, I've never seen a single negative comment on anything. The positivity of it all is brilliant.
That's what our community spirit's all about, bigging each other up. And if there is any negative, which is very, very rare, we instantly speak to whoever it is. Like you say, it's all about being positive and helping each other, big each other up and sort of celebrating the idea of coming up with ideas quickly.
Nick, thank you very much for coming in.
Nice one. Thanks for having me.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Nick Entwistle. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, please, please share it with others. And if you could take 30 seconds to leave a quick review wherever you listen to your podcasts, I will be forever grateful. Finally, if you'd like to get in touch with me or keep up to date on new episodes coming out, just find me on LinkedIn under my name, Ben Norman. I'm the one with no hair. And if you'd like to know more about Principles, where I do my day job, just head to principlesagency.co.uk.